Chapter 2. 1919. The Barge. Dan O'Reilly had thought of it, and had screamed his idea to Fred Baker. Fred's eyes widened, and a small hope flickered. "Try it! Try it!" he shouted. The barge was tossing and twisting in the current, and they crawled slowly, clinging to the deck plates. At last, they pulled themselves upright at the stern of the barge, and grasped the lever that would open the cargo doors. Together, they pulled. In their excitement, they forgot the river for a moment. They concentrated on moving the lever. It was hard work with the force of the river pushing upwards against their efforts, but desperation lent strength to their arms. The lever shifted. Below them, the cargo doors of the barge began to swing downward. In the hull of the barge were metal flaps, which could swing downward when the barge was hauled from the water and poised above a railroad car, allowing it to dump its load in one great avalanche. The door swung now, and the gravel flowed out into the riverbed. Holding tight to the lever, Fred and Dan looked ahead, gauging their progress. River water flowed into the hold. The barge began to settle lower in the water. They heard the welcome sound of the metal hull grinding against the riverbed. Twice it bounced against the rocks, and then, so abruptly that the men were thrown off their feet, the barge stopped. They looked up, hardly daring to move, afraid even to breathe. They were precariously at rest on the river bottom. The barge moved slightly. They drew in their breath. It settled again. They stood up to take stock of their surroundings, and their faces paled. Just a few yards ahead of them, the white mist rose into the air. The water streamed smoothly by with a force that was beyond imagining. They were stranded.
The 100 yards to shore might just as well have been 100 miles.
They had done nothing but prolong their agony. Voices reached them from the shore, encouraging voices. "Hold on! Hold on! Help is coming! Wait for McLaren!" They looked at each other with hopeless eyes. Who was McLaren? And how could he possibly help them?
Nell, May 12, 1923.
Nell had been making up the guest beds, the blue room for Iris DeVere and the green room for Evangeline Murray. She had provided clean sheets and fresh flowers and opened the windows to air the room. Both rooms were a respectable distance away from the two men in the house, Joshua, who would ignore them, and her orphan nephew Danny, who would annoy them with questions about America and his constant talk of airplanes. Nell had decided to give Cornelia Braithwaite the master bedroom. It was hard for her to believe that Cornelia was actually going to be here in her humble home, sleeping in her parents' bed. The great Cornelia Braithwaite, who had changed Nell's outlook on life and caused her to shorten her skirts.
And any day now, she was going to get her hair bobbed.
She just needed a little more encouragement from Cornelia. She made a final survey of the room and then picked up her purse. It was time to go. The adventure was about to begin. Down at the McLaren boatyard, she found Joshua immersed in his work, as usual. Maddie Ferguson, the man she had once been expected to marry, was making a half-hearted attempt at sweeping. His work at the boatyard was pure charity. He had returned from the trenches of France as a broken wreck of a man. But at least he had come back. So many had not. Nell's nephew, Danny, had apparently said something to annoy Joshua and had been banished to a corner where he was sanding a hull. At 19 years of age, he was as tall and lanky as his Uncle Josh, and blessed or cursed with Joshua's red hair and hangdog gray eyes. He was also bursting with youth and enthusiasm and was whistling happily while he worked, despite the thunderous, disapproving glances of his uncle. "I was wondering if you could drive me to the station," Nell said to Joshua. "I'm busy," said Josh, indicating the boat he was working on. "Doogie Hamill's been drinking and boating again." "All that money and no sense," said Nell, running a knowing hand across her brother's carpentry.
"It's fools like him that's kept 3 generations of McLarens in business,"
Joshua remarked. "And Danny?" Nell asked. "He wants to buy a plane," Joshua said. "I'll take you up in it, Aunt Nell," Danny offered. Nell laughed. "No, thank you, Danny." "Over my dead body," Joshua grunted. "Do you want me to get the Ford out for you?"
No, said Nell. I only need Morag and the wagon.
Are you expecting something at the station? Denny asked, ceasing any attempts at work.
Guests, said Joshua. Educated ladies from Ohio. You know, the way your aunt likes to hobnob with educated ladies.
Nell felt a guilty thrill as she lied.
They're just guests like any other guests, but they have some heavy luggage, and I thought you should meet the train and help them.
Heavy luggage, Danny groaned. How long are they staying, those ugly old ladies from Ohio?
Who says they're ugly, Nell said, and they'll stay as long as it takes.
As long as what takes, Danny asked.
Never you mind, said Nell. She turned back to her brother. They told me in their letter that they might have something heavy with them, and asked if they could store it here, in the boat shed.
Joshua looked around. He'd have to agree that there was plenty of space.
Before he could even consider his answer, Nell said, I don't want to charge them anything for storage.
Nothing at all?
No.
Joshua grunted his disapproval.
Well, how big is this thing they want to store?
They can't be taking up all my space.
Not big, said Nell. Not much larger than a steamer trunk. But it may be heavy. That's why I wanted you to come to the station with me. Perhaps Danny could come as well to help. I wouldn't want the ladies to have to load their own luggage. They'd get the wrong impression of us.
And we don't want the ugly old ladies to get the wrong impression, Danny chirped.
Is that a new hat, Aunt Nell?
Yes, it is.
Why shouldn't I have a new hat if I want one?
Go round to the stable and get Morag and stop being cheeky.
Danny left, whistling his way out into the sunshine and the chance of a change of scene.
Maddie continued sweeping, but he kept glancing over at Nell's legs. She had to admit it was drafty in the boat shed.
She should probably have worn stockings with her new short skirt.
Flesh-colored ones. Perhaps she would even ask Evangeline for advice.
Josh, Nell said, what do you think of women's rights?
I don't think of them, said Joshua. You've got the right to vote now. What more do you want? Do you want to go to war? Or perhaps you'd all like to be doctors or lawyers.
We could be if we wanted to, Nell said. If we weren't tied down by our biological functions and lack of education.
Joshua blushed at Nell's mention of biological functions and said somewhat sadly, You already have more education than I have.
That was just luck, Nell said. If Dad hadn't needed you to help him, you could have stayed at school and...
I was wasting my time at school.
There's plenty of women who'd like to have the opportunity, Nell insisted.
Joshua lay what he obviously believed to be a kind hand on her shoulder.
Don't worry, he said. All you need to do is get a husband, have some babies, and forget all about this nonsense. Maddie's still waiting for you.
And he can go on waiting, Nell said impatiently. I do not need a man to establish my identity, and I don't need babies. We only ask you to be treated as equals.
I don't know where you're getting these ideas, Joshua said.
Maybe I get them from the educated ladies, Nell replied, and marched out of the boat shed to find Danny waiting outside with Morag and the wagon.
Joshua came behind her and helped her up into the wagon.
If you really want to be equal, he said, you can climb up there next time without my help.
Don't think I couldn't do it, Nell said. I'm not a cripple, you know. And don't you grin like that, young Danny. You just hold your tongue and drive.
Nell maintained a dignified silence for a few minutes, but she was still anxious about her brother and the effect that Cornelia might have on him. Of course, he didn't know that she had already met Cornelia in Buffalo over the winter, and he didn't know the depth of her admiration for the formidable Miss Braithwaite.
Josh, she said, will you promise not to be rude?
I'm not rude, he replied.
But you're very abrupt.
I'm a man of few words. What's this all about, Nell? What's got you so nervous? It's just a couple of old biddies from America.
Nell returned to her silent contemplation of all that was ahead of her in the coming weeks, and Joshua asked no more questions until they came in sight of the station.
What on earth are all these people doing here? He asked as Danny reined Morag in and stared at the crowd.
Nell drew in an amazed breath. It was so much better than she had dared to hope. She had tried to rouse the local members, but she'd expected nothing like this. The word had spread even further than she could have guessed. Cornelia Braithwaite, editor of the Women's Free Press, president of the Women's Freedom Movement campaign, was coming to Niagara Falls, and women from far and wide had come to meet her. "They're all women," Danny commented, "and some of them are young."
"They're here to meet our guests," Nell said.
"All of them?" Joshua asked.
"Oh, I should think so," Nell said as casually as she could.
"Is it a famous actress?" Danny asked. "Someone from Hollywood?"
"No one from Hollywood is coming to our house," Joshua said. "It's probably some damn fool woman novelist or dress designer."
"No," said Nell. "We are going to be entertaining Miss Cornelia Braithwaite, the famous feminist."
"Feminist," Joshua groaned. "That explains everything.
Are you involved in this movement?"
"Oh, really, Nell, can't you find anything better to do with your time?"
"No," said Nell. "This is the very best thing I can do with my time. Cornelia Braithwaite and her companions are the most important people ever to come to the Falls, and you should be honored that they are staying with us."
"Well, I'm not," Joshua grunted. Nell's voice rose in anger. "If you, as my own brother and my closest surviving relative, can't support me in this,
then I will never, ever help you again. And see how far you get without my assistance in certain matters."
"I'm not spelling it out, Joshua, but you know what I mean."
Joshua hung his head. "Yes, I know what you mean. You don't have to rub it in." Danny was too busy attending to the tidying of his hair and ogling the women to drive Morag to the station yard. So Joshua took over and soon had the wagon pulled up alongside the gate. Nell held out a hand for assistance down and then abruptly pulled it back and leapt to the ground unaided. Let him chew on that, she thought. Danny vanished into the throng.
"Wait here," Nell said to Joshua. "I'll go and meet them." "They'll be easy to recognize," Joshua said. "They'll be the ugly ones."
"I will recognize Miss Braithwaite," Nell assured him, "because her face is famous worldwide." She pushed her way through the crowd, looking for Cornelia's only too familiar face. There was no need to mention that she and Cornelia had met before. Let Joshua think that this was the first time. There was no need for him to know all of her little secrets. At last she saw her. Cornelia would stand out in any crowd, not only because she was unusually tall for a woman, but because of her air of command. When Cornelia spoke, people listened. Nell took a moment to survey her heroine before she made her presence known. In a light tweed traveling suit and a brown felt hat, Cornelia was the very picture of a practical woman. Sensible shoes, made for walking, not dancing, and a striped tie. If men could wear ties, then why not a woman? The inevitable and unavoidable Iris DeVere was at Cornelia's side, in one of her usual ridiculous dresses.
"Nell! Nell, dear!" Cornelia's voice carried easily across the noisy crowd.
The women fell back respectfully. Nell McLaren was being recognized by the great Cornelia Braithwaite. Nell blushed to the roots of her hair and made her way forward.
"How kind of you to meet us in person, with all the work you have to do."
Cornelia took Nell's hand in her own and shook it firmly, looking Nell squarely in the eyes. Nell blushed, brighter than ever.
"My brother is waiting outside," Nell said. "We brought the cart for the, you know." "Yes, yes, good. Evangeline is back at the guard's van waiting for it to be unloaded. Come along, Iris. We'll go and meet Nell's brother."
Around them, a crowd of worshipful women gathered up Iris and Cornelia's luggage. Nell laughed aloud to see Joshua's face when she came out of the station at the head of the throng. She felt strangely light and free. Not herself at all. This was the effect that Cornelia always had on her. The first time she had heard her speak in Buffalo, she had wanted to leap from her seat and shout, "Yes! Yes, I know what you mean!" She had not, of course, actually shouted, but she had waited by the stage to talk to the great woman. And so it had all begun, the adventure that was reaching a climax on this warm spring day. Cornelia offered Joshua a hearty handshake and instructions not to get down from his seat as the women were perfectly capable of taking care of their own luggage. "Can't stand a lot of useless women standing around waiting for a man to take care of their problems," she informed Joshua. Naturally, Iris had to have help with her suitcases. Nell couldn't imagine why Cornelia, who could surely have any companion she wished, always chose to travel with Iris DeVere. Thin and mousy, Iris was probably no older than Nell herself. But she appeared to have worn herself down with her own nervousness. In Buffalo, when Nell first met her, she had worn an enormous white fur bonnet. Now that it was spring, she had adopted a straw hat decorated with overblown roses. Her faded blonde hair straggled out from under its unsuitable covering, and she was constantly brushing it back from her eyes. Her arms and legs appeared to be thinner than ever, if that was possible. Mere matchsticks. Following Cornelia's lead, Iris offered Joshua a timid handshake, but instead of shaking her hand, Joshua heaved her up beside him on the seat.
Iris expressed her thanks when she thought no one was looking, and settled down to rearrange her hair and her hat. "We have one other item," Cornelia said. "Evangeline will be here with it in just a moment."
"Is this the item that you wish to store in my boat shed?" Joshua asked. Nell hastened to interrupt. "I haven't explained your mission to my brother yet, Cornelia." Should she have called her Cornelia in public? Was she being overfamiliar? "I thought you might prefer to do that yourself." "Quite right, Nell, dear," Cornelia smiled at her again. "Most women don't know how to talk to a man. I can't stand a lot of useless blather myself. I like to be treated as one of the boys, you know." Joshua looked Cornelia up and down. Nell knew that look. She'd seen other men look at Cornelia like that. A speculative look with a hint of something else. It was a mystery to Nell. "We are here," Cornelia said, "on behalf of the Women's Freedom Movement of Sandusky, Ohio. I am the president, and Miss DeVere is the recording secretary." "Miss Braithwaite is also the editor of the Women's Free Press," Nell said. Joshua only said one word.
"Aye."
Cornelia continued, undaunted. "We are here with Evangeline Murray." "And," she was interrupted by a sudden cheer from the crowd. "That must be Evangeline now," Iris said, "with the barrel."
"Barrel?" Joshua shouted. "Don't tell me that you damn fool women are going to try—"
He stopped mid-sentence. The crowd parted, and Evangeline Murray stepped forward in the smartest red dress Nell had ever seen. Nell saw her brother's mouth drop open in surprise. He hastily took off his hat and ran his fingers through his hair. The woman in the red dress smiled up at him as the crowd carried her by. Nell sighed. This was going to complicate matters. A birthday cake with candles was not going to be enough. Obviously, Joshua McLaren had found his own 49th birthday present.